हरिः श्रीअद्वैतगदाधर शिवशरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
The Krishna consciousness movement is essential in human society, for it offers the highest benediction, perfection of life. How this is so is explained fully in the Bhagavad Gita. Unfortunately, mundane wranglers have often taken advantage of Bhagavad Gita to push forward their demoniac propensities and mislead people regarding right understanding of the simple principles of life. Everyone should know how God or Krishna is great, and everyone should know the factual position of the living entities. Everyone should know that a living entity is eternally a servant, and unless one serves Krishna, one has to serve illusion in different varieties of the three modes of material nature, and thus wander perpetually within the cycle of birth and death. Even the so-called liberated Mayavadi speculator has to undergo this process. This knowledge constitutes a great science, and each and every living being has to hear it for his own interest. Anybody catch what was just described? Yeah, Sambandha Gyan was here. So this is the basis of the core of all knowledge, right, in the whole Siddhanta, is that Godhead, the living entity in the material world, and then what is the condition of the living entity in the material world, like that, how he is in a conditioned state and how he can liberate himself. Right. So all that then is being, he probably just very nicely described there, without all the technical words and that. But other times he does use the technical words, but this is a preface. Like that. So here, highest perfection of life. The word perfection is always used in connection with liberation. So you won't call love of God perfection. Right? That's highest perfection. Perfection means liberation. Right? It's important to know how these key words are used. Otherwise, one gets confused because they mean different things. So perfection means you're out of the material world, so you've attained perfection. But ultimate or the highest perfection then means developing love for God, because perfection actually isn't complete until that's obtained. So that's why Madhvacharya makes the statement that actual liberation is situating yourself in a relationship with Godhead, you know, within the spiritual planets. Otherwise, you're technically not liberated. You know, I mean, you could say you're liberated, but it doesn't really mean that you are. You know, it's just like you fall off a building and all that, and you're, you know, put your arms out and are kind of moving this way and that way. You could say you're flying. You know what I'm saying? But this problem is it's quite temporary, this situation. You're not in control of it. So they're not actually in control of the liberated state. Because it's being a neutral state, it's not someplace you can remain. Right? The day can't remain in twilight. It either has to go to night or become fully light. Right? It can't remain there. So the living entity can't remain in that state of perfection without either going into prema or coming back to the material world. Does it make sense? Very important. These aren't something, means these things are mentioned, but the whole idea is these become part of how you think. Right? The philosophy is there that it's contemplated, it becomes part of your lifestyle. So your lifestyle is actually based on what you think. Otherwise, then what one will do is by identify oneself as Krishna conscious simply by the particular rituals that one performs. Right? That's how you're Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? You know, you wear this, you're Krishna conscious. You wear that, then you're not as Krishna conscious. You know, does that make sense? That's the only way you can tell. But actually, Krishna consciousness means it's a lifestyle based on that philosophy. Then it has much more consistency there. Otherwise, it'll just be your what things you would notice in your material life, you notice them in Krishna consciousness and then perform those activities. Does that make sense? In other words, if you're worried about dress, you know, in the way of, let's say, it being comfortable, then you'll only look at the Vaishnava dress in connection of what's comfortable or not comfortable. If you look at it in the way of fashion, then you'll look at that aspect. If you look at it in sophistication or refinement, then you'll be able to, you know, dress in that way. You understand? So we're catching those aspects of it, which is what we can observe. Though it's all part of the process, it's all important, but it doesn't create the consistency that is there if the philosophy is understood. And understanding that philosophy, you contemplate it and apply it in your lifestyle. That's different. That becomes very deep. That's what is appreciated by others. So when we're worried about people may not appreciate our lifestyle, yes, that may be true if it's shallow. But if it's not shallow, then what's not to appreciate? Right? What is not to appreciate? Right? The common person's lifestyle, what is there to appreciate? Because why is anybody doing anything? Right? Just because everybody else does it. And it's something they can kind of relate to, so they're doing it. Right? But who stands out? Who do people talk about? Who's in the news? Who's in the books? Who's in the literatures? It's people who, their lifestyle is something more to them, something they contemplate. Does that make sense? So there's a consistency in, you know, of course in their mundane inconsistency, but there's a consistency in their lifestyle. Something that you could see, oh, he thinks like this, therefore he does like this. So it's something to emulate. Right? So that is the point. Yes, you could say it is true. People may think it's strange and not relate to it. Yes, it's true if you don't have a life. Right? If you have a life, why they wouldn't be interested? Right? Because they're looking for one. Right? So we have to understand these fine points there. Otherwise, if we work simply on the external, that's all the farther we'll get. Right? We'll get the external. We'll become good at the external. Or we'll become good at not following the external. We'll have a really nice down, pat phrases and thoughts why we shouldn't be following it. And all that. Does that make sense? Well, you're going through a few in your mind now. But does that make sense? So this is the idea, is that this is to give something more. Right? One joined Krishna consciousness to find more. Right? You didn't find just to change, you know, what's on the menu and, you know, what's the, wardrobe. Like that, you know. Go to bed a little earlier, get up a little earlier. You know, that wasn't the reason you joined. You joined because there was something more. Right? So one should remember that. And then this is where that more is being described. Just thinking, this is where the more is being ascribed, and the more that's being ascribed is a more, right? It's love of God, right? Yes.
Maharaj, in the nectar instruction, Prabhupada is explaining that true religion.
Through the?
True religion.
Through religion, okay.
True religion teaches us how to live with the bare necessities of life.
Oh, true religion teaches us to, okay, live with the bare necessities of life. Okay.
So sometimes when we're presenting this concept of Balasram, people think that they cannot live in openness while within this realm of Balasram. But I'm wondering,
who are these people?
You know, in the West, sometimes preaching, distributing nectar instruction, you know, is...
No, but who are these people in the West?
Karmis.
You know why the karmis have problem with it? Because the devotees do. Mm-hmm. The devotees didn't have a problem with it. Why were the karmis? Right? If the devotees are leading and the karmis are following, that means the karmis are just following the mood of the devotees. Did Yudhishthir have nothing?
That's what I was going to say.
What is bare necessities? That's what's important, because it mentioned here. Simple principles of life. The simple principles of life. See, this is the difficulty. In India, because you're dealing with philosophy, then you have the detail, which is complex. And you have the principle, which is simple. Right? The details are based on the principle. The principle is actually, you know, what is the cause. And the detail is the effect. Right? You have a principle, and by applying that, then you get results. Right? So that's the effect. So, and that comes in the form of detail, according to the time, place, and circumstance. But the principle is simple. So if you base your life, you know, to push forward their demoniac propensities, take advantage of... And mislead people regarding right understanding of the simple principles of life. So there's a misleading here going on, is that the simple principles of life doesn't mean simple tongue. This is probably, I'm glad you brought that up, it's probably one of the biggest, misunderstandings of words in the Western vocabulary. In the Western vocabulary, simple means something unsophisticated, undeveloped, something childish, something rural, you know, something, you know, probably where it's simple, a person who follows this simple ton, you know, just some hick out, you know, some inbred hick out in the, you know, the boonies there that makes moonshine, like that, and, you know, takes a pot shot at each other now and again if they have a chance, but, you know, they're too drunk to actually hit anybody, so, you know. Like that. So that is the idea in, basically, you could probably say 99.9 and we'll stop there, but we could keep going with the 9, but to avoid infinite regression, we'll stop at the 1.9, you know, unless you're into gold, then 2.9s or 3.9s would be really into it. But the point is that that's what they think simple means. Simple is a philosophical principle. It's a statement. Is that your life is, let's say we take cleanliness. That's a simple principle. Then in your life, everything about your life is clean. Your clothes are clean, how you keep your clothes, where you put the dirty clothes, you know, how you put them on, where do you put them on, you know, how do you maintain them. You know, do you put on your, you know, your jeans and all that and take them, hang them back up, put them on again the next day, then hang them back up, and then put them on the next day, then hang them back up, then the next day, and then once a week, then you, you know, your wife or your mother comes and, you know, out of disgust grabs them and throws them in the laundry, and then you come to get them and they're not there. What happened to them? You know, and then you go ask your mom and, you know, your wife, and they're, well, you can't wear that disgusting, you've been wearing for the last week. Hey, they're fine. What's the problem? Don't be a fanatic. You know what I'm saying? So, where's the principle of cleanliness? That's a principle. That's simple. Right? Is it complicated, cleanliness? It's simple. That's the point. Being God conscious, seeing God in everything. That's a simple point. This is the meaning of simple. But they take it, simple means, you know, something that's covered with mud and cow dung. That's simple. Right? And to arise above that, you know, then, you know, in this, what do you call it? The Monty, you know, Pythonic understanding of this, then the guy who's the boss is the one that's not covered with cow dung, right? That's how they could tell the difference, you know? A bunch of peasants just sitting around covered head to foot with cow dung, and a guy walks by not covered with cow dung. And then one of them says to the other, hey, that's the king, right? And the second one asks, how do you know? He says, because he's not covered with cow dung like us from head to foot, so he must be the king. You know what I'm saying? So that kind of misunderstanding is held by, unfortunately, those who are sophisticated. So then those who are intelligent enough to understand and practice Varnashram are the very ones that are the farthest away from understanding it. Because of this one simple point. is they don't actually know the definition of what simple means. When Prabhupada says simple, they means nothing. That's their thing. Simple means nothing. No, simple means it works. Just like, let us say, you go to these old buildings, you know, old churches or old fortresses and stuff like that. How did their water get off the roof and onto the ground? Right? Through a complicated series of pipes and little, you know, what are those called? Troughs? What are those called?
Gutters.
Yeah, gutters and pipes and all that. Or did they just have these very nicely carved gargoyles that stuck out and the water comes off the roof, goes into that, and shoots out onto the ground? That's simple. Like over there, you have that, when you walk in, there's that dragon with the yaksha. That's simple. But people who don't understand this principle, they'll say, this is not simple life. Because simple life means unless you're covered in cow dung and mud, it's not simple. Disgusting, unsophisticated, that's simple in their mind. And because of this, these very same persons are the very people who are standing in the way of making this work in our society. Simply because they have their own conceived ideas on the semantics of what simple is. But it's a philosophical point. But they don't know philosophy in this way, in a technical way. Their material life is technical, but their philosophy is simple tongue. But the fortunate thing about the philosophy is that because it comes from the simple principles, even if you only know that and it's not developed, you're still perfect. That's what's so perfect about the philosophy. In Krishna, even if you're just following in a very simple way, not sophisticated, it's still just as good as if it's sophisticated. The problem comes, the problem's not that. The problem is their material lifestyle is very sophisticated and they can't see how to connect the two. Like that. So this is a problem. So the simple principles of life means it's simple, it's straightforward, it's an open drain. You can clean it easily. It doesn't fall on the other bricks so it doesn't wash them away. It goes out to a distance. Because it goes out to a distance, it needs something to hold it up. Therefore, you put a little yaksha there holding it up on his head. That's simple. It's sophisticated. It's artistic. But it's very practical. That's simple. The drain around the lotus building. All the water from the building drops down into this drain. It goes out like that. Open, nice, you can clean it. That is simple. The drain at the conch building, that is sophisticated. It's complicated. Because it's underneath the courtyard. You know, they got the drain in the middle, which is always full of junk. You got to look at it like that. It's always clogged up. It goes all the way around, and then it goes out that way. There's that one big huge seat that was there. There was a monster tree in there. But because the perfect engineering thing to run that drain was right through the roots of that tree, they cut the roots of the tree. It lasted a little time later and died. That's called complicated. If they just put, like the lotus, the same drain going all the way around there and all the way out, that's simple. The tree would be fine, the courtyard would be fine, all the garbage is in the drain. You don't have to look at it when you walk through the middle of the courtyard. That's simple. Simple means straightforward. It works. Right? But the thing about it is that in this, if it's based on the simple, then it can become sophisticated and still be simple. You know what I'm saying? We could put a piece of tin over there held up with a bamboo. That would do the work. It's simple. Or we can have what we have sitting there. It's still just as simple. The principle is the same. It's become more sophisticated. In other words, there's the need for the individual to make their life sophisticated to that degree that is important for them. But it must be based on these simple principles. If you can't take it back to that, what does it mean? Why is it like that? Why do you do what you do? That should be able to be expressed. So sophisticated doesn't mean complicated. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. Right? Sophisticated simply means it has taken more finer refinement of the principle in application. So the application can be very simple, or it can be very sophisticated, but it's based on a principle. If there's no principle, then it is complicated, because there won't be any consistency, and one aspect of your life won't match with another. You know, otherwise, why is it that when, you know, somebody meets somebody else and they're friends and this and that, they hit it off on one place, you know, they're sitting wherever, they're sitting at a bar or someplace like this. But as they get to know each other, they find it completely different than what they thought. Why? Because their life is not consistent. Otherwise, by knowing one aspect of life, you should have at least an entrance or an idea of the other aspects of the life. Right? But there isn't. Why? Because each aspect of their life is different. Does that make sense? Yes.
At the same point regarding the living room of the devotees, for example, in the house, like the living room, it should be simple, but sometimes you like chairs, you know, and then you should chant your japa sitting on the floor. So it means like
the living room.
For many devotees,
the living room.
Kind of a contradiction, because when you put chairs, you put furniture, it becomes sophisticated, but can it be followed by the same principle, simplicity?
What is the principle of them making, adding sophistication to the living room? Okay, comfortable. So if comfort is the thing, then why would they be sitting on the floor? But that's not comfortable. You know what I'm saying? It's not consistent. If it's comfortable, let us put a scenario like this. Let us say comfortable is the principle. So that would mean, what is comfortable? Things that are hard and with sharp corners, or soft things, right? So that would mean, okay, now you want to make comfortable. Now do you want to make it comfortable just for yourself or others also? That's also a principle. Is it just about yourself, or is there the concept of others? Okay, so now let us take that we've taken comfortable as the primary element, and then we're going to take it should be also extended to others. So we're going to take those two principles, okay? And based on that, then we're going to create sophistication in your living room, okay? So that would mean now you have devotees who like sitting on the floor, but you have devotees who, that's okay for a short time, but either due to their practice or their knees aren't so good or back, or this, they like sitting in something that's not on the floor. So that would mean you would have to find some furniture. But I mean, putting mattresses on the floor, putting pillows and everything, so it's comfortable, right? And then what you pick as the sheets and that, it should be something comfortable, you know, not some old, you know, burlap bags or something like that, you know, unless you're inviting donkeys in or something, they might like it. Then that means then the furniture that you're buying, it's not its aesthetics as much that you're looking at as its comfortableness. In other words, if it comes down to it looks fabulous but isn't so comfortable, or it's comfortable but maybe it looks nice but not necessarily, you know, something completely out of some magazine or something, you would choose something more comfortable, right? Because you have many options. So do you want the wooden frame, you know, because when you put your arm on, it's not so comfortable. But if it's made out of something softer, that's comfortable. That would make the distinction, because aesthetics wasn't your principle. You understand? Aesthetics has to come in line with comfortable. Right? So that has to be made. So you make that variety there. Then that would mean then also how you set it up in the room should be comfortable. It shouldn't be difficult to use. Right? And let's say the colors you pick should be comfortable. They shouldn't be too bright, too wild, too... It should be comfortable, pleasant. And it should be something that a variety of people will like. So it can't be too avant-garde that maybe you'll like, but no one else will. You understand? That's a consistent living room based on the principle of comfortable. But what you're talking about isn't consistent, because comfortable is one of the many aspects in their room. And so this is this, and that's that, and this is this. And when you come in, you just wonder, well, this is really kitschy. And there's something strange here. And you're not comfortable. Why? Because comfort wasn't a principle. What was the principle? There wasn't one. I just want to be happy. I want to be comfortable, but it's not comfort. You understand? So there's no simple principle on which it's based. This is philosophy. Everything that's there is based on that simple principle. That simple principle is Krishna. Krishna is cleanliness. Then the ways of manifesting it, that's Lakshmi. We assist Lakshmi in attaining cleanliness. That's the devotional process. Now that can be as sophisticated or as simple as you like. That's consistent. So that is the principle. If it's based on, then you can say how it is, if it's consistent. But the point is it's not, because people don't understand this principle like this. Those that do more, you go into their houses, it's more consistent. You know? Because they are comfortable with it. But many houses you go into, either there's no attention put because they feel attention's Maya, but then isn't the house Maya? Isn't being married Maya? Isn't having children Maya? So why is it this one Maya they leave? They don't mind offering up the slovenliness of their house to Krishna as an offering of keeping it simple and not getting involved. And why would that be? Right? Because if they weren't a devotee, if they were a karmi, their house would look exactly just the same. But if they were a karmi, they would be married and they would have children. So in other words, those things that they don't care about, they don't mind that connecting that to Krishna. But the other parts, it's theirs. So they're going to raise their kids how they want, right? They're going to be married when and how they want. And these things, then if you say, well, what about the Vedic? They'll say, don't be fanatic. That's restrictive. You know what I'm saying? At the same time as those rituals that you, in your own mind, can somehow or another relate to, that's Krishna consciousness. And any ritual besides that is either fanatic or, you know, you're out of it. You know what I'm saying? So all this is because there's not the consistency of basing it on the principles of life. So that's what the Gita is giving, is all the principles. Right? That's the thing. It's just bare bones giving the principles. Then Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, that shows how the devotees take those principles and, according to their particular position, then establish it in their life. Right? Swayambhuva Manu. Now, he is the son of Lord Brahma. Right? And he's a Kshatriya, he's a king. So generally you could expect he's living quite well. Right? Now, he wants to marry his daughter. And so his principle in there is, you know, it should be a proper marriage and the wife and daughter should be satisfied, right? So, in other words, everybody should be satisfied. It should be according to the Shastra and the individuals involved should be happy about it. So, in other words, everybody's happiness is his main principle. But that is, according to the Vedas, that happiness as defined by the Vedas. So now how does he go about his marriage for his daughter, right? So he just sit in the room and, you know, work it all out, and because he's the boss and he's the father, so therefore everybody else has to accept? No, because then the principle is his own false ego, his authority. You understand? No, it's the protection of his family. So protection means they have to be comfortable. So, in protecting his family, he has to see his daughter's married, but that she's comfortable with it. And the wife, because, you know, she's been training the daughter, she's comfortable with it. So, then he takes the wife and, once he's understood that this is a good arrangement, then he takes the wife and daughter, and if they're comfortable with it, then he makes it official. He doesn't make it official, and then if they don't like it, then say, well, what can I do? You've already said, so we're committed, so my false ego wouldn't allow me to step down, and so therefore you gotta buy it. Right? So that's simple. It's clear. It's clean. It's straightforward. Does that make sense?
It means it should be based on one principle.
More or less. More or less, it's basically one principle, but not that other principles won't connect together. Like your kitchen. It's like your, because the living room is okay, you're taking comfort, but you may use comfort in the kitchen, but you may use efficiency in the kitchen. You know, it means whatever it is, but there has to be something that's common, otherwise what's, or there has to be some combination of common elements. that it's always based on certain principles. Right? Does that make sense? So then it could be that, because sometimes you may have something like old, like it has old clothes. So they're very comfortable. They may not look good, but you like to wear them because they're comfortable. And some people who don't care about aesthetics will wear them out in public. And people will leave them alone because they are comfortable. They look like a slob, but at the same time, that's not what comes across. That they're just comfortable with themselves. So you leave them alone. But if someone looked dressed the same but was not comfortable, then immediately you would harass them. You know what I'm saying? So, like that. But if someone's worried about comfortable and it should look nice, then they will find those things that look nice and are comfortable. They'll match it. You know what I'm saying? In other words, there should be principles in your life that are important. That's what the second verse of the Chaturshloki, the Bhagavatam, is meaning. Everything of value, it's actually Krishna. He is the principle. What you're valuing is Him. So you should be able to recognize what are those principles that are important in your life. And then based on that, see that that's how you're doing things. You know what I'm saying? If somebody likes regulation, they like everything in order, then that should be how their sadhana should be, their service should be, the house should be, their dealings with others should be. Then it's consistent. Otherwise, if one's one way, it's not consistent. So you know the principles on which your life is based. What actually are your values? Because there's not that many. From those values come so many others. But it goes back to one thing. The guy has, 30 cars, in his estate. And each one is different, but there's a common element to all of those cars. Why he has those. Either it's something that's just, they're unique cars, or it's that they're all cars that are very efficient, or they're ones that all look of a particular kind of, unique, specialness. They have a particular aesthetic, or practicalness, or something. Or there's something very rare. So he has an Edsel, the most ugly car you can ever think of, but he has one because they're rare. You know what I'm saying? There's some reason that he has those, or a combination of a few of those. He likes what's, special, exclusive, rare, beautiful. So one car he has because it's very beautiful. It may be a very impractical car, but it looks good. Another one is very rare, so it's a collector's item, so he has it. But it's not necessarily that it's a great car. You know what I'm saying? Another one is rare because it's so nicely made. It's, it was put out in this year before they, got worried about, planned obsolescence. So it's really a good car. You know what I'm saying? There's something about it that makes it. So that's what makes the difference between the people who are successful in this world and who are not. Is the ones who are successful, they have more of a clear understanding of these principles. They don't know it's connected to Krishna. They just know that this is how you do things. And people who don't work like that, they don't work with. It's not that when you have these kind of people get together, you may think, oh, they're so famous or they're so wealthy or so powerful. No, it just has to have like that. Sometimes they have writers and stuff that nobody even knows about, or philosophies, very eclectic like people that come and move comfortably in those circles, and they're happy to have them around. Why? Because they're, as a personality, consistent in that they base their life on principles. Does that make sense? So they're all comfortable there. Otherwise, what makes the difference? You know what I'm saying? A big actor knows what he can do and does just that. A new actor is not that. He doesn't know what he can. He's trying this and that, trying to be his artist self. And therefore, he's still his artist self with nothing. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that it's clear what are the principles that you're basing it on. Then there's a consistency. If you find that principle, may have some aspect of what you're dealing with, but not enough, then you have to then see what other principle has to be added. And maybe it has to look good, but maybe it has to be practical also. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, like that, then there's a consistency. Does that make sense? Then it works. Otherwise, the guys that they go for the girls because they look good. But is that why he bought his phone? You know, or his car? That may have some point, but it may be because it's practical or it does really nice work. So if that's the thing, why isn't it consistent in his life? So that's why there's a problem. Because he's thinking practically, but his view on girls is just looks. So then when he gets involved with that girl, the relationship doesn't work because she's not practical. All she knows how to do is look good. Because that's all he's expected. Right? And so then there's a problem. Why? Because he's not consistent in his lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, he would have looked at someone who looked good and is very, very, professional in performance of their duties. Does that make sense? So like that, then you have. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Okay. Anything else on this? Or? No? Yes.
We understand that stitch cloth is not simple. I've never heard the full details.
Stitch cloth, not simple. It's not considered a one. One is, it's not simple because you just get cloth and then you rip it to what size you want and then wear it. That's pretty simple. Stitch cloth means you have to get it, then you have to give it to a tailor, they have to do it, they do it right, they do it wrong, this and that. It doesn't matter, if you've, got dysentery and lost 10 kilos or, there was a, 10 feasts in a row and you gained 10 kilos, it still fits. The stitch cloth doesn't. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's more complicated. Also, the stitch cloth, why specifically in deity worship it's not used is because it's not considered clean. Because in stitch cloth you always have a hem. Right? And in that hem, dirt gets inside. And so it can't be cleaned as much as unstitched cloth. Because unstitched cloth means it's just the cloth. So you put it in water and take it out, then the dirt's gone. But the other one, you put it in the water, it's gone out. The outside layer, but what's inside, it still holds dirt. So that's why stitch cloth is not used in... Does that make sense? Fits, it's simple to put together.
Multi-functioning.
A chudder. It can work as a chudder. You can put it on your head. You can cover yourself when you sleep. You can fold it up, sit on it. You know what I'm saying? It means you can do anything you want with it. Well, if you have a coat, how many things can you do with it? It's limited. Like that. So that's the point, is that it's sophisticated, but it's limited. And so, therefore, it gets very specific. While the other, it can do more things like that. So that's the difference. But you have to think like that. Otherwise, it's difficult. Because it can be worn in so many ways means you have to keep it looking in that way. You know what I'm saying? The shirt, you can only wear it in one way, of course, unless you ask, who were we talking to the other day? Who was I talking to? Just talking to someone yesterday. I don't even remember who I was talking to. That's bad. And it was yesterday afternoon, I think. They were talking about... it was Antidu. Okay. He was talking about this... he was a quantum physicist and a real, quantum physicist. Completely... like the kind where they don't even relate to the outside world, really. So he put his T-shirt on inside out, backwards, actually. And he was, and his wife commented that it's on backwards. So then he took it off and put it on again, frontwards, but it was inside out this time. She made a comment about that. And then he went through it and worked out that, then he suddenly turns around and says, she said, how many ways are you going to wear this? And then he said... Then he stopped and said, there's 48 ways to wear this. Because you have the four holes and all that, and then it can be worn in this way. So you put your head through this, in this one, and your arms up this one. And so like that, he worked out that there's 24. Then there's inside and outside, so 48. So then after he said that, he says, I have another one. You know, you could roll it up, you know, and stuff it someplace. Like that. And the professor said, and in the meantime, she's worked out about another 20 ways of wearing it, like that. You know, so, but technically it's not acceptable. So you put it on, it doesn't do anything. It just sits there. So it only has one way of wearing it, and so therefore it's very easy in that way. You know, so it's funny thing is it's sophisticated in that it's complicated, but it's actually, in one sense, meant for someone who is not so developed. Right? Because it's only worn that way and they don't have to worry about it. Well, something that can be worn in a multiplicity of ways, just by nature, it can be worn in a different way, means if you want it to be worn in a certain way, you have to maintain it that way. It's not going to take care of itself. So you put on the chadar, you have to keep it as a chadar. Otherwise it'll fall off. So that means the person who's living that simple lifestyle of the unsewn cloth actually is more, has to be more sophisticated to wear it. So the modernists, as devotees, will say, oh, it's difficult, it's not practical. But what they're actually saying is, I am not personally sophisticated enough to wear it. I'm actually, when it comes to clothes, in wearing it, is actually a slob. But I'm not going to say that, so I'm going to put the fault on the clothes, is that they're not practical. And in one sense, yes, for a slob, they're not practical. They're meant for somebody more sophisticated. But it's actually anything, it's just practice. Right? Like you can see the kids, they grow up wearing it. And they know how to do everything with it. You never see that they ever have a problem with their cloth. When they first come, yes. But after a while, you never, they do anything. So these combinations, that's the problem with energy, is there's always a contradictory element. Right? Because you'll see people who wear sewn cloth, who are sophisticated, wear a variety of things with it. It's not just a t-shirt and a pair of dungarees. You know? Like that. You know why they're called dungarees? No. That, yeah, for sure. My cow dog. Yeah, it's dungarees. Yeah. Because they come, it's cloth. The weave of the cloth is the cloth that they used to use in South India. I think it's Tamil Nadu. There's a group of fishermen. And the cloth they make for the sails, so it's so strong so they can get destroyed in storms and this and that, is that cloth. And so they call it dungra or something. Or, you know, like that. So then the British saw that and saw it was good for making pants. So pants made from sail cloth are called dungarees.
That became the blue jeans.
Yeah, that same cloth is your denim that then went over there and whatever it is, Mr. Levi or whatever it is, then had a boatload of that and a boatload of rivets, and he was a tailor. So, you know, put two and two together, he cut some pants. He didn't have thread. He's riveted them together. And then the local, you know, cowboys saw that and thought, now these look practical. These aren't going to rip when you're out, you know, on the fields. So then it became popular. But it originally came back to India. Just when you thought you got away. So. But you'll have the complication. So they'll wear more things with it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like your Western suit. It's not, it's, you have, you know, you have your undershirt, you have your vest, you know, things, I mean, your shirt, your vest, you know, more than they have their cummerbund, this and that, then they have the other, then they have their tie. You know, there's so many things. You have to have the coupling, this, that, so it's actually very sophisticated. You know, and if it's not sophisticated, it's not considered very cultured. Right? So it's all sewn, but it's all that. So then that same person who's only in the practical wouldn't wear that either. So they can't wear a dhoti and a sari. They wouldn't wear a suit or anything fashionable like that. So what they're doing is making a statement that I'm actually, as far as fashion goes, very unsophisticated. I'm actually a slob. You know what I'm saying? Like that. I mean, people can contest this if they like, just bring out what is the principle they're working on. You know, if it's you have these guys that are you know, multi-millionaires or billionaires, and they drive around in their Cadillac with a top down, a 10-gallon hat, a T-shirt, and an old pair of pants. And they couldn't care less to go to their board meetings like that because they got so much money that they don't care, you know. And they're so good at what they do is you like them, don't like them, they don't care.
They won't deny that they're sloths.
Yeah, but they won't deny they're sloths. It's out of principle they're doing it. You know, at a principle. Otherwise, why a monster Cadillac? You know, it's, you know, like that. You know, and then the shoes and the hat. It doesn't match. It's all gaudy, but it's principle that they do it. You know. But you probably find the same guy can put on his Armani suit quite nicely if he has to. You know, if he really feels like it. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
Maharaj,
You understand what we're saying? This, it's not a bash on how people are dressed and this and that. It's trying to get to the point of that principle is not necessarily how people think. That's the whole point. And that all this was just examples trying to make it that. So no one should make a mistake of what we're saying here. The point is based on principles. Yes.
Arjun, ashram and the essence. I saw this documentary some time ago. I thought it was quite interesting. This man, he was some English entertainment guy, but he had this ability, and they showed him, he was spent on the streets of London, and he could pull anybody, and looking at him, he could tell them what they did, and whether that was their dream job or not, and what they actually desired. And I noticed the way he did this, when he pulled people over, he have to be able to look at them and look at their eyes. Sometimes if they talk away, they're talking to me, he'd have to go, no, no, look at me. And one guy he explained, he said, you're into security. And, you know, he started explaining, I could tell the way that you look at things. You know, you've got your shoulders back and you're always, you know, so he could continually pull people over and say, you do this, you're in administration, but you're administration in the arts, and you should go, yeah, well, actually, I run an arts magazine or something, you know, every time. But he seemed to, you know, have the understanding that it was about the way people see, people look at things.
Yeah. It's your perspective.
He said, you are a security man, I can tell. He said, but that's not your dream job. He said, I'm getting, you know, more space. He said, you wish you were a professional golfer. That's what I said.
Yeah.
But is that the Varnashram, the different...
Is that Varnashram? Yes. I mean, Varnashram is based on that because everything is like, see, the essence in here, the principle, the one principle then that you're meaning then in Varnashram is Brahmins, it's studying and teaching. So it's knowledge is their basis. So they see everything according to knowledge. Kshatriya is protection, so they see everything in connection to that. Not that they have an attitude and they like to, and they're always angry and fighting. No, that's a shudra that a kshatriya hires to be a policeman or a bodyguard or a soldier. Huh? And a foot soldier at that, yes. Like that. Because that kind of guy you'd never want to put on anything more sophisticated. Like that. But protection is what he sees through. And a vaishya, it's economics, profit. That's how he sees everything. Right? And a shudra, then it's art, how to express like that. So that's the vision that they all see through. Now within that, then there'll be fine points. But that's what it's there. So you want to gain knowledge, that's a brahmacharya. You want to practice that knowledge in a family environment, that's a grihastha. You want to pull yourself from, you know, how you say, material absorption and try to, you know, control that and regulate it in a very aggressive way. That's a vanaprastha. Sannyasa's indifference. So it is a vision. That's what I was saying is that it's based on a principle. Everything else expands from there. Then you can tell what's what. If you don't understand these, then you make a mistake. You make a mistake. You can't tell what's what and who should be doing what. So that's the problem, is that it's looked at the externals, at the so-called detail. And if the detail isn't sophisticated enough for you, you don't like it. Or if it's too sophisticated, you don't like it. But the point is it's a principle, so that means it can become as detailed and sophisticated as the individual likes. The knowledge of the thing is unlimited, so how much they can accommodate, how much they can contemplate, how much they can apply is how deep they can go into it. Like, you talk to someone who doesn't know much music and they know a lot of music, but if you actually talk to the top musicians, they'll say, I don't know anything. I'm just standing on the beach of the ocean of music. I've heard many, many people say like that. You know what I'm saying? So someone who actually, it's unlimited. So how far you can take something is great. That's why the Varnashram is so perfect. But in your expanding your vistas of individual development, it should not conflict with someone else's development. That's why the Varnashram system is in place, so that each of the, you know, eight positions in the system don't conflict with the other and mutually support each other. That's why the restrictions are there. People say, oh, I don't like to be restricted, means I don't actually care about anyone else. If you don't like to be restricted, be unrestricted in your own four walls of your house. But as soon as you walk out the door, if that's your attitude, then you're just self-centered and selfish. You may have an attitude, you know, you may be from Jersey, it doesn't matter. But you got problems. Because you don't know how to deal with others. And that's not your right. Your rights end where someone else's begins. So you have to find which it mentions, because it being energy, so there's always a difference. Where one person, that's where they want to be, the other person doesn't. Right? The Brahmin knows administration. The Kshatriya knows administration. That's the commonality. That's what they have in common. The Brahmin doesn't want to do it, the Kshatriya does. So that's where it goes. Now, if the Kshatriya expects the Brahmin to do it, you know, get involved in politics for him, there's a problem. If the Brahmin thinks he's going to get involved and manage the scene, it's a problem. Then the Kshatriya is going to feel bad. So where is so the Brahmin, his knowledge being the thing, it's not the implementation of the knowledge on that scale. It's the implementation of the knowledge for your own personal development. That's what he directly involved in. But because he knows the field, he can explain it to anybody else so they can use it in their life, no matter what is their field. You understand? So therefore, he won't administrate. So then, taking this is a practical example where we can see is what goes the problem is you have the temple president, you have the temple council. The temple council, they don't take responsibility for the temple. But they, in their own, you know, particular reason, they have their own idea why they have the wisdom to give advice. Either they were the temple president, you know, back before Lincoln was shot, or, you know, somehow or another, he does well in his business, so he thinks he has something to say, or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So they have the temple council. They think that they only want to give advice because they don't want to take responsibility, but they think because they have said it, the temple president has to do what they say. In other words, he is just their lackey to get things done that they say. So, in other words, they are actually the head of the temple, and the temple president is actually their shudra. That's how they see it. Now, will that work? No. So why doesn't this work in all the temples around the world? Because it's against the principles of Varnashram. They can get together, they can give advice, right? But he does what he wants, having heard the advice, so he takes the full responsibility. That's how Varnashram works. So if they're going to be Brahmins, be Brahmins. Stay out of the management. Your role is advisory. Stick to that. You want to manage, then you take responsibility. You don't hide behind your little committee. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is these things overlap. The Kshatriya can fix certain things, but according to Shastra, he can't just make them up. The Vaishya can do what he wants, but he still has to follow rules. He has to give tax, he has to give in charity, he has to take care of his Shudras. You know, the Shudra, you know, can, you know, whatever he does in his private life, but when he's at work, he has to do what the boss wants. You know what I'm saying? So, all these different things are just set. Otherwise, where is going to be the interaction? You know, the Kshatriya can take tax, yes, but he has to protect. So how many times does devotees make an arrangement in the temple that takes tax, but what do they do for that person or department they take tax from? Nothing. So that's why it's not religious. That's why it doesn't work. You understand? So Varnashram is very practical, down-to-earth principles on how, what are the variety of approaches in human life on how to engage your natural propensities in God's service. That's what Varnashram is. To take any other approach, you will fail. You will fail. Unless you're extremely pious, all the other people around you are very pious, you have faith in Shastra, so you'll just do the rules and regulations and all that, but I'm not looking at that. You know, that's not what we're looking at. We're not talking about high-born, you know, families that they can actually name seven generations before and tell you what their gotra is and their lines, and they've been following these traditions for all this time. They've been vegetarian. They've been worshiping the deities. They've been doing this for all these generations. So you have a group of those. Yes, you can put it together without this understanding because they will just follow the rules perfectly. It will be like that. It won't get anywhere spiritually, but it will be materially very nice. But if you take a bunch of rat bags out of the gutter, then the problem is then the only way they're going to have any good qualities is from devotional service. They don't have the qualities on their own. They have potential, but they're not manifest, right? By their bad activities in previous lifetimes, they don't have the qualities. So by devotional service, those qualities will come out. That means then they have to follow Daiva Varnashram, which means it is simply how to engage your body, mind, and words in God's service. That means your body, your mind, and your words have a nature, and you have to know how to deal with it. You have to accept it. You don't accept it, you're irreligious. So real sin is not accepting who you are, not willing to act according to what your actual nature is. That's real sin. Like that. Because then, what's the point? The point is that immorality, how do you connect it to Krishna? That's the problem. But how do you connect something that you're doing that's not actually your nature to Krishna? Because Krishna already has rejected it in the Gita. Better you do your own service not so nice and someone else's nicely. You understand? So there's a lot more here at stake than is there. We just take everything so external. But this is why in the preface it's being brought the simple principles of life. They're being misled. The simple principles of cleanliness, then people will mislead by making up their own philosophies. Oh, it's not practical. Oh, it's fanatic. These are all their philosophies. This is misleading. Mundane wranglers. So now you can spot a mundane wrangler, yes, and their mundaneness there. But at the same time, it's not just the mundane wrangler that's the problem. It's mundane wrangling. Right, so that's what we have to be very, very careful of. Is that our principles are based actually on the acharyas and what they're saying. Then it's there. You know. So when, you know, self-help gurus talk about principle-based, you know, living and all that, they have a point there. And there's something, but it's not taken far enough for us. You know, be good, be nice. Okay, but why be good, be nice? What's the principle behind why I should be good and be nice? Right? Why should the man say you should be principle based? Why? Why should he be good, be nice, not cheat? You know, be straightforward. Why? What's the basis? Right? You understand? That would right there be a hard question for people to answer. That person who said it has no problem because he'll say, is that because of the lifestyle God wants you to live? So that means his point is that live a lifestyle according to what God wants. He doesn't know much what God wants, but he knows you're supposed to be good and nice. Right? And God gave two cheeks, so if one gets harassed, you turn the other one so they can harass that one also. So he knows these things. So that's why he's doing it. Right, so then if that's why the devotee's taking that, do they know that this is why he's doing that? Why does he say principle based? They don't know. Right? And so therefore moralism becomes more prominent. In instead of, you know, trying to please God. And then if you're trying to please God, we know a lot about God and what He wants, so therefore we should be trying to do that. That would be principle-based. But when it comes to that, oh no, a practical, oh no, I don't like that, oh no, this, that, no, nobody does that. So what's that got to do with God? So it's not principle-based. So they'll be sitting there propounding principle-based management on one side, but on the other side is their lifestyle is not principle-based at all. Other than, yes, ultimately I want to go back to Godhead. How are you going to do that, though? Like chant Hare Krishna, okay, that's 2 hours. What about the other 22? You know, you just keep like that, and after one or two questions, you've run out of answers. So that's the point. Take that basis. You want to go back to Godhead. You want to develop love for Krishna. And then expand that so it's that principle is part of your whole life. That's principle-based. So this point of principle-based, that's Vedic. So that's why it works for that man. That's why he can write a book and sell millions and billions of copies, because it works. Why? Because it's actually Vedic. But he doesn't understand the full import of what that Vedic principle is. He only knows part of it. He's gotten a glimmer of it, a glimpse of it. And that glimmer has worked so well for him, let alone if it's applied fully. Right. So that's what Shastra Chakshus means. Right? An ability to see through the eyes of Shastra, not through your own sentiments. Even your own sentiments have to be seen through that. What you like, what you need. The problem is not that you have likes and needs. The problem is, are they connected to Krishna? So the problem is not that you're austere and unless it hurts, that it's not Krishna conscious. And that's not the point. If you want to do that, then do it if that's the way you live the whole creed. But the point is that's not what makes Krishna consciousness. Right? What is the reason we came here? Right? We came here because we want to control and enjoy. So that's the actual problem. So, and what does Krishna consciousness mean? Krishna is the controller and I'm the servant, right? That's the point that's put right, is made here. Everyone should know God or Krishna is great, never should know the factual position of the living entities. Everyone should know that the living entity is eternally a servant, and unless one serves Krishna, one has to serve illusion and different varieties of the three modes of material nature, and thus wander perpetually within the cycle of birth and death. That's what you should know. So, how is it by having the chair in your house and you don't sit on, you sit on the floor and chanting japa, how is that recognizing that Krishna is great and we're his servant? If you can explain it, great, sit on the floor. But if you can't, why are you so dogmatic on the rule and go to someone else's house and they sat on their couch and chanted japa, and then in your mind you're thinking, wow, these guys are, you know, not very Krishna conscious, they're complete gross sense gratitude. What is the basis? You understand? That's what this study is to do. You know, you go away from this class, you learn some verses, you know what chapter in Gita is what, you know the name, you can say, you know, a few major things. That's very nice. That means you remember stuff. But the real thing to go away with is the ability to analyze and see things. Not in a way to criticize others, but the way to use in your own personal development. That's what this class is for. That's why this series of degrees, there's 3 degrees. They're called Shastra Chakshus. They're how to see through the eyes of Shastra in various ways. Like that. That's what it's for. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Anybody? Is that okay?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.